You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Land of Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
And we are right in the heart of Missouri rifle season. It is November, past the 11th, because that's when season 12. Opens up. So we've spent 2 days hunting here in the Missouri firearm season. I know there is a pile of hunters in the woods right now. That's all great stuff. And we are going to share a little bit of kind of our strategy, do a little bit of hunting, talk a little bit of our hunting strategy, what we've seen. And what we didn't see is what we can talk about today. But and then we're going to talk a little bit about, because I've been doing it the last few days. I know there's a lot of other guys that are sitting there doing it, especially most of our audience that probably is a little bit habitat-minded and thinking, okay, there is a pile of hunting and a pile of shooting going on. How can I make it better? And that'll be the...
Well, and not even just how can I make it better, but how do I understand how the deer react to all this?
Like, yeah.
I want to understand what the reaction is, so then I can make it better. How do they even respond to all this? Because
how do they respond? They go hide some more, yeah. And then don't move till after dark. Kind of that deer in the headlight look to me. When you see a deer, I just picture a deer frolicking. Yeah, I said it. Through the timber, and then this shooting starts, and the hunters start, and the ATVs fire up, and it's just like, whoa, and then they turned into just that pinned down in a treetop, like, I ain't moving.
And, why would they?
why would they? There's all kinds of big noises going on outside, so, or going on around them. But anyway, and this is, we've talked a lot about it, the tradition, the heritage. We had a really popular podcast that was What Gets You Outdoors, and this is kind of we'll open up with some deer stories, deer camp, kind of talk about what hunting, especially rifle season, is for myself and Matt. But then we'll go into kind of course, habitat stuff, but the strategies and basically stereotypical people involved in firearm season.
There's a certain spectrum of when you start talking about firearm season, that really there's three main categories, or I guess, that we've kind of determined that a lot of hunters can fall into regarding firearm season.
And I've been in two of them.
I
started in one of them, maybe all three. I forget what different ones you have, but I know I've been in two of them for sure, because there was a time where I was in...
Can you legally do that?
When I was in one of these stereotypes. And then as I've gotten, and frankly, the last year and a half, I've kind of gotten this other one that's kind of stepped away from.
Are you saying you're changing?
I'm evolving.
Oh.
I'm an old soul, if you will. There's certain things. I mean, Matt and I often talk in the podcast, or not in the podcast, just driving down the road or whatever. I find myself to where, and this goes back to the deer camp, yesterday morning when we got up at the cabin,
mm-hmm.
and I said, made the joke of like, yeah, I want to just set the property up to where we know the afternoons are better in the mornings. We just get up and have coffee and kind of hang out. I'm like, I would love to have about 30 people in camp that have never hunted before,
yeah.
and have people, guides, dads, whoever, take them out, and I just hang back at camp and start cooking and hanging out.
I kind of want to be the guy who gets up and puts his coveralls on, fixes the coffee, and then gets the buggy and just goes and drops everyone off at their place.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
And by the time you get back to the cabin,
somebody's already shot one.
And you just start making the rounds again.
Yeah, and the best part of that is you're not going to be the guy in the tree stand hearing the shots and like, oh, so-and-so killed one. You're going to be the guy who gets to celebrate with every person that's harvested.
You're the first one on site, and but you're the first responder. There we go.
There you go. Yeah.
To the reaction, and you get to take up the blood trail, make the recovery. Man, I can't wait to get old and do that.
Now, I'm right there with you. I was sitting there. That's what I was just like. I'd love to improve all this habitat and have all sorts of stands set up, and then just have people come in and hunt, and it'd just be, it'd be a grand old times. What it'd be?
It'd be fun.
And then I look back at myself, even 10 years ago, and I thought, "Holy cow, what has changed?" I know I've gotten like 10 gray hairs since then, but
10?
That's yeah, that's all I got. And
I can see 11 growing right
now.
No, as you're
my
talking.
Wife pulls them out. So that's just to me. It's like as we evolve as hunters, and you know, I said old soul, but I'm 30 and we are already talking about conservation, preservation. And that, to me, that's something that I should be in this, I hate to say it, but bloodlust era right now, to where it's like, I just want to kill the biggest deer out there, put him on the wall and talk about him. That's kind of what people of my age do. But to me, it's way more about the habitat and the conservation and the legacy.
Like I was coming back from Laddie's property, over in Delaware. And here's drive me to the airport.
They have no idea. I guess they did. They heard. I was going to say they don't have.
We've heard us talk about Laddie.
We have
and
not
Delaware
released
property.
The video yet.
Going to come out this week.
Yes, this week you'll see
the final product.
Evergreen
Nature Preserve.
Nature Preserve.
It's an incredible video. Well, guys, we'll cover that at the end. But we were on the way to the airport, and he was like, "Tell me about your hunting career. Where are you at?" And it was very. I guess no one had really asked me that question. It took me a second to really sit back and think, but obviously we are very similar into that mindset of, you know, I've been really blessed to grow up hunting from a young age and have been able to take many, many deer and trophies of different sizes, lots of turkeys, seen everything to see in a turkey woods. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop hunting, but I've been blessed to be able to experience it. And I want to get to a point where we can just share it and improve it and know that, hey, I'm making an impact for later on down the road. And then let other people get there. And that kind of leads us into the tradition of deer camp and what just we experienced this weekend, as Missouri's gun season, firearm season opened up yesterday.
Yeah.
The 11th of November.
And for me, we had Kip on a couple weeks ago, and we talked about, we just got the new numbers out. We lost 2 million hunters from 2011 to 2016. 2 million, and there's only about 12 million total. So
well, there was 12 million.
There was
10.
Catastrophic, honestly. A landslide drop. And we ask ourselves, what are we doing so wrong? And what are we doing to put the brakes on and say, whoa, what can we do to get those 2 million back and then some? And frankly, Matt, we talk about this, but we never publicly said it on a podcast. But,
don't you raise your voice at me.
When we talk about that, in the last 5 years, we've dropped numbers. But in the last 5 years, I've heard way more talks of trophy deer and trophy management and harvesting mature deer, mature deer, mature deer, mature deer, to a point where even... And I say this because I have a lot of younger kids, younger teenagers write me messages on our social media pages and email that have nice young deer, but they're scared to shoot them because they're afraid they're going to get shamed for shooting a young deer.
Yeah.
And so it's like as trophy deer management goes up and the popularity of that goes up, the popularity of hunting goes down.
What I don't want to happen is there to be the idea of, you know, we have specific management goals that we'd like to reach, but that doesn't mean that they need to be set for everyone else, though, too. Like, when my gosh, the number of dinkers that I've killed in my lifetime far outweighs the number of older mature class deer. And from when I started deer hunting for many, many years, if it was a legal buck, I shot it. And I loved it. Well, I loved every single minute of it and wouldn't ever take that back. And I just because a lot of people or it's projected out there that a big buck is like it's almost like a status that you have to get to or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's not an age thing. If you're a new hunter, you got to go make yourself happy.
Yeah.
Bar none.
Can't put a kid in a... I would have probably never be where I'm at today, and I certainly wouldn't be in front of this microphone talking about habitat and hunting heritage if my dad had put me out in the woods and said, okay, wait till he's a four-year-old and shoot. I would have. I can look you straight in the face right now and tell you, I would have not shot a deer on the farm ever. Even the good buck I shot last year, I think, was 3.5.
Yeah.
So I would still, at 30 years old, be on the farm going, well, I'm still looking for him.
Yep.
And so that's that rant kind of comes up because we were at the cabin and I saw the wall of shame, all my dinker bucks that I killed in like 4 years there. That to me, I just laugh. There was the cheese grinder buck. You saw him, his forked horn, his tines, his main beams overcrossed. And I had so much fun on that hunt, I rattled. Remember my big Primo's rattling antlers I told you about? My buddy was grunting, and we sat there laughing, and it was like constant, pop, pop. Also, we look up there, and here's this little yearling buck looking at us. And he said, you going to shoot it? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to shoot him.
Yeah.
And I shot him, and that was back in the next shooting days. And he dropped, and it was like, whoa, yeah, we rattled in a buck. Man, that was so much fun. It was just like we see on the TV whenever they're doing that down in Texas, except this was not quite that same caliber. But we sure had a good time.
And that's what it has to be.
That's the type of hunting that you can get more people on board with.
And that's the type of hunting that one very few people portray the... You know, this is such a fine line that you're running. So talking about it, it is sometimes tough because you want everyone to be successful. And I guess in the long roundabout way, what it comes down to is what you may classify as a trophy or what your objectives are as a hunter may not always agree with everyone else's, but bar none, you are a hunter. And you have all the right, if where legal, to shoot whatever buck you want to shoot.
Because the absolute last thing we want to happen is for you to go into the woods and let somebody else dictate your standards of a buck to a point where you decide to stop hunting and pick up another hobby because you don't feel like you can please society for the type of bucks you want to shoot.
Do I personally want to shoot a big buck? Yes. I think everyone would say, hey, if I had the opportunity, I'd shoot a big buck. But I'm not going to say to you, don't go and shoot that deer because if it's your first year, I'm not ever going to say, don't go and do it. And the question becomes, would that deer make you happy? If that deer came in and presented you a shot, an ethical shot, would you take it and then be happy with the harvest?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer is yes, then that's your personal choice. Then fire away.
Yeah, and we'll high five you just like it was a 200-inch deer. This is what I told you in Kansas about, and they Chad and Richard kind of laughed at us because
are we talking about ODB?
Yeah.
Yeah, the buck.
And the buck came in, and they were like, ah, they passed him up. It was like the first morning. I think he kind of caught him off guard. Chad said it was on the other side of the tree, so he couldn't have shot him anyway. But
yeah,
humongous body.
I mean, every characteristics of an old, mature deer.
Front shoulder. He looked like a buffalo.
Yeah.
Front shoulder just huge.
Neck
rolls, and not really much of a neck. It just went right into shoulders.
Coloration of a deer, you don't really use that to judge age unless he has all the other characteristics. So this deer was huge bodied, big pot belly,
looked like he had
shoulders,
stubby little legs,
monster neck, and very gray in the face. Good bases,
short tines,
but yeah, didn't have much else good quality, I guess, when it would come to a rat.
And they were like, he might score. They were telling us all about him, and they said he might score 115. And I was like, I'll shoot that deer every day of the week. Richard kind of looked at me like, that's crazy. I'm like, here's how I dictate whether or not I'm going to shoot a deer. If my heart's going, then I'm shooting him.
Yeah.
And if a buck steps out and I look at him and he's just, I'm kind of like, oh, that's a good deer. I probably don't shoot him. But I look back at when I was a kid, and if any deer that stepped out, and I couldn't even like function. Then it was like, there's no point in trying to say, oh yeah, hold off. I don't want you to shoot that deer.
The one of the very first times my dad just, and it was opening morning of a hunt. He dropped me off in the woods. I could take you to the exact little knob or mound of dirt that I stood on. It was right next to, it was right on the property line, honestly. And the neighbor,
and you
had,
shot on in the neighbor.
No, I did not. The deer just came from there. They had recently done a clear cut on their property, and deer were working back into the property we had to hunt. And I just stood there. I had a 20 gauge Winchester slug gun, and two does came up, shot the one. And you can kill multiple deer in Virginia. And then here comes a spike behind him. I don't know, it's like 5 minutes later. And I remember, I didn't get a shot off at him, but that encounter of you know, hearing Dad talk about it, watching the videos of a buck following does and coming in after their trail and nose to the ground kind of stuff, like, that's what I was anticipating happening and wanting to happen prior to ever hunting. And I was watching it before my eyes, and that spiker had me so shook up. I'm hunting from the ground. The deer's 30 yards away, and I'm 10, and it was just incredible. Incredible. Mm-hmm. I was so shook up, I couldn't get a shot off kind of deal. Like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing it, man. This is awesome. And if I would have killed it, dude, that would have been something else. Like, I would have been cloud nine for weeks.
You'd have been trying to figure out a way to get that those antlers cut off, take him to school.
He was going to school.
I remember the first turkey I ever killed, I cut the beard off and put it in a Ziploc bag and took it to school.
I showed my art teacher. Yeah. My art teacher, because I knew he was a hunter. I said, and I had art that day. It was elementary school. And I was like, oh, I got art today. I'm showing Mr. Harris. And that beard went in that bag, and I took it to school.
Uh-huh. I did the same
thing. Still smelled great.
Yeah. Yep, for sure.
All the little girls thought I was crazy.
Yeah, what is that?
They still do.
Beard. I think of a story. I love building tree houses as a kid, so that transferred over to, I think back, and I'm like, my gosh, I did some stupid stuff. And one of the dumbest, I would build these tree stands 12 foot up a tree, 15 foot up a tree, no harness. Just go up, hammering in 2x4s, hanging on with one arm and driving nails with the other. Wrap the arm around the tree, hold the nail, hammer with the one free hand.
And then you had 4 nails in your teeth. Yeah. You're like, oh, I can't go back down.
Yeah,
I don't want
exactly.
to climb back down.
And I built all these shooting houses, or built all these tree stands. Well, then finally, one time I built this huge shooting house and put carpet all in it. And this was all going on like during September, like, when I should have been staying out, I was like, oh, it's time to build. It's fall. I got to go build a shooting house. So I built a shooting house, bought a Remington 6400, I think, Woodmaster, semi-auto.
Boom!
Semi-auto 30-06 because I watched T-Cam Mike growing up, and that's what they that's what they had. And so I bought this semi-automatic 30-06. Dad was like, all right, I'll go sit with you. So it's Dad and me sitting in the tree stand. I'm like 13 years old, 12 years old. And I hear, see this doe come storming down. And he goes, I bet there's a buck chasing her. Get ready. Sure enough, 5 minutes roll by. Here comes a buck.
Whoa.
Whoa. It was kind of that twilight where you really can't see, but you see a big body. And, of course, I couldn't see anyway. I was so, I pull up and Dad's like, get ready. He's getting ready to go to the backside of the food plot. There he is. He stopped. Boom. Guns rustling everywhere, and I pull the gun up and say, where'd he go, and he goes, he's still standing there, and you missed him. So semi-auto, boom, buck trots off, and I'm like, I got him that time, right? And he goes, no, you missed him. And I still see it clear as day, and we walk up there in this big old split back blackjack tree, had two big old holes in it. I shot right over his back, and my dad, I said, how big was he? And he goes, oh, he's big. Still to this day, he hasn't told me how big that deer was. I'm sure he's forgotten by now. But
yeah.
He said it was a good buck. But I think back in all those days, just, yesterday when we were at deer camp, and deer camp for me has always been very, it's kind of evolved. You know, starting out, It was just Dad, my brother, and I. We were at the cabin. The cabin is my dad's old house that he grew up first 10 years of his life in. No running water, no electricity. We used to use it as storage. So then when we convert it to a cabin, there was mice all through it, like most old farmhouses.
What do you mean was? Was mice. There are
there are mice now, but trust me, the first night, the first year we ever stayed in it, it was like there's mice crawling everywhere, and I was so scared because we had that old like vinyl flooring, so their nails just clicked all over it.
What's that code? Oh, Morse code. It's like someone's doing Morse code all night.
And so anyway, we would be like sleeping, and it's just wake up, and Dad would always cook breakfast after the hunt, so you set through, and you'd put on your coveralls and freeze because we had no idea what layering was.
No.
And we had no idea what wool socks and liner socks was.
You knew what three pairs of socks felt like jammed into a boot size that just fit for one.
You couldn't even move them.
No.
And that's like biggest air problem number one. When you can't move your toes to get blood in them, they're going to freeze off.
You walk around with bricks on the bottom of your legs.
I remember it used to feel like somebody tied strings around him, just was like trying to twist
cut
them off.
Circulation, yeah.
Yeah. And get
Dad's
so
like,
cold.
Walk quiet. I can't even feel my feet to walk quiet.
Yeah, exactly. And we would go hunting and come back, and Dad would cook breakfast on the old fire cook stove. And it's the same one we cook on today. It's the same one he had when he lived in that house. Just awesome memories. And that was just Dad and I and my brother. And now it's evolved to where a few of my other hunting buddies come over, and their dad, and actually their dad and my dad used to hunt together, so they kind of get to always reminisce and talk about the old days. And then just this year, we invited one of our neighbors to the north that has never been there. We've never really, he's an old farmer, didn't hunt a whole lot, but we're like, you know what, let's invite him. He took us up on the offer, had a great time with him, and it's kind of just, it's one of those things where you could cut gun season down to 5 days. You could cut it down to where we just use shotguns. You could cut it down to where we only get a day of it, but you cannot take away that deer camp breakfast for me. That's a cherry on top. That's what it's all about. And that's actually what my buddy's dad told me. He said, this is my favorite part of deer camp is this breakfast right here. And getting together, telling the stories of the morning hunt, that's what deer camp is for me.
You know, one of the things that I remember the most about, and honestly, everyone does it or goes through this process, but it was something that always stood out to me. And when I was growing up, I never bow hunted with my dad. I got into it as I got older and just evolved, I guess, as a hunter. I was like, yeah, that's something I want to do. So I remember, you know, eighth, ninth grade, that's when I really started to get a compound bow that could shoot and kill a deer, really start practicing, and went after it. But so basically my season didn't start until firearm season, and there was so much anticipation throughout the fall, you know, the temperature starting to get cooler, so on and so forth. But things didn't get real to me until it was night before, and it was not like the preparation that we go through today, as in, okay, what's the wind doing?
Oh,
whatever. Like
we didn't have
it.
We didn't pay attention at all.
Which tree are you going to go sit against? And but what it was, we each had our hunting jacket or we had a hunting vest, and it was going through the checklist with data because we had this, we called it the dark side, or like basically a mud room in our basement.
Oh, okay,
where we had like the wood stove and everything, and it's always dark, so we just call it the dark.
That's where you always laid out all your gear.
Yeah, so we would lay out gear right there in the basement between that and the mud room, the dark side, and we'd each go through that checklist, and we'd put it on, and we'd go, okay, you got the grunt call. Do you have shells? Do you have your gloves? Do you have this? Do you have that? And then the infamous
hot hands.
Dad, well, I didn't know what hot hands were until I was old. Like, Dad never told me about it. He wore those brown jersey gloves and said, here, use these. And that's what I thought everyone used. And I was like, man,
there's got to be a better way.
Yeah. But that's just what I grew up having. And
did you have a can call?
Not at that point. Oh. I got one.
Whenever the can call first came out, my brother and I, of course, we watched Primo's videos like crazy. When that can call came out, we were like awestruck and like, you mean deer make another noise besides a grunt?
Yeah.
And so we bought one, and I guarantee we turned them things over nonstop.
Yeah.
Meow.
It was that interaction with Dad and my brother, because we all went out together. It was always Dad, my older brother, and then myself. We'd prepare the night before together. We'd all get our guns out together too. Do a little quick cleaning, and if we needed to change a barrel on the shotgun, we would, from smoothbore to rifled, whatever. We'd do all that together, get shells laid out, and then the last thing we did, we had this mason jar, and Dad kept it in the closet, or I guess the cabinet, all year round, and the only time it came out was the night before gun season, and it was an old t-shirt that was ripped up, had baler twine around it, tied around that t-shirt, and then he had a little bottle of Dopey from way back when. I think it was probably expired, multiple years old. So what we would do is take that out, take the rag out, tie to the baler twine from the mason jar, pour a little bit of Dopey in that mason jar, and tie it in. And what Dad would do, he'd drop us off kind of all in a line, if you will, but like, you know, very spaced out, and he'd tie it to his back belt loop and walk in and just go. And he go, this, I've seen it before. You know, deer cross that line and then just come down to the next person. And it was like, oh my gosh, this the is drag the smells, the oh. the preparation.
To I me, remember I remember when they had scent wafers, and I'm sure they still have something, but
Hunter Specialties
had Fresh Earth, and my brother was... He bought some of those, and still to this day, and even the Scentaway soap, the green Scentaway soap, that smell and the Fresh Earth smell, as soon as I mean, it touches my nostrils. It's like, it's deer season. It's deer camp. It's time to go to deer camp.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that's the stuff that nobody can ever take away from, but it's those memories that really make deer camp.
Oh, yeah.
No shots fired, no crosshairs put on any deer's body. It's straight up just the camaraderie and the smells and the sights and the breakfast. That's what it is for me.
And then always the ride to the farm too.
Yeah.
Like I
we always went to the cabin the night before and drove in after dark. And it was like a tradition to swing those headlights across the front pasture to see if there's any deer out there.
I'll see you in the
morning. That we would shoot them, but just to see if there's anything out there.
Right.
And, oh gosh, it just, yeah. And to me, that's what, when I want to introduce somebody, even Lord willing, my own kids one day, that's the deer camp I'm going to introduce them to, is the whole... Right. The fact that it's so much more than just shooting an animal trying to punch a tag.
Like, it's almost like a rite of passage. If you want to start hunting, you better come to deer camp first, and then, or you better experience these things that we do, and hopefully you'll find the appreciation years down the road once you've gone through this process.
Once you've gone through that process, you've shot your dinker bucks and your does, then you can maybe evolve into a trophy hunter and I say trophy hunting very loosely, because maybe it's, I shot a 2.5. I want to shoot a 3.5 next year. Okay, I shot a couple 3.5s. Yeah. I want to shoot a 4.5.
A step. And that progression, though, you know, can change and be different for everyone, every person. But what we don't want to happen or portray or anyone go through is a shooter's remorse, basically.
Like, yeah.
I don't think that should ever be the case. Like, if you're pulling the trigger, one, you should know exactly what it is you're taking, but you should be just jumping for joy. Like, I mean, just pumped up every single time.
Exactly.
Every time.
It breaks my heart when somebody shows me a picture or sends me a picture and they say, it's not the one we were hunting, or I probably should have gave him another year, or... I know you probably wouldn't want to shoot this one, but it's like, no.
That's not
you get
hunting.
To decide what makes you happy, and if you are happy, then I am happy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you being happy means that you're going to introduce somebody else to that feeling, then I will never, ever
put you down.
And in fact, if I catch somebody putting you down for that, then I'm going to pull them off to the side and have a talk with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly,
I'm going to take Matt's dad's dopey rag and I'm going to put it in your mouth.
Yeah. Gag you with it. Because trust me,
I'm going to get you to shut up.
You don't even have to put the rag in the face. Just put the nose over that jar. My gosh.
Doesn't smell anything like dopey.
You know, it was one of those things that mom, is like, she knew when it was coming out. And she just go to the other side. Go to the other side of the room. Don't you even open it close to me. But
was
man.
Was that part of your, like, when you were being bad? Matt, don't make me go get the jar.
No, I loved the jar because it meant I was hunting the next day.
I meant, like, if you were getting disciplined and there was, like, Matt, like, my dad had the belt. Maybe your dad had the jar.
No. Because I would just sat there and... No, I just...
Kind of sound like snort wheeze. To me, like, that's all, so many things. And I know we were planning on talking about,
we went way much longer
deer
on this,
and that's why I kind of told you, let's do one on deer camp. And you were like, well, let's add these things. And it's kind of habitat minded, but I was in the back of my mind, I thought, I'm going to talk about deer camp a lot more than 15 minutes just because it gets me like, now you and I both very hardcore bow hunters.
Yeah.
And frankly, we kind of target our sights on stuff that maybe upper age class or whatever it is. In Kansas, your buck was probably, I don't know if you got a job on yet.
I haven't gotten to the taxidermist yet. I've talked to him. He says, basically, in the field judging that deer, I would have said he's a 3.5-year-old deer.
Yeah.
Awesome, incredible hunt.
We saw him in the summer.
Yeah.
And frankly, from the very get-go, we said, we're going to shoot that deer
regardless. Darn right. He says he thinks it's 4.5 or older. Yeah. He said it's got a lot of wear. I haven't been able to meet up with him yet to judge myself. But honestly, I've had people ask me, how old was that deer? Because it looks really old. It's like, honestly, I think it could be 3.5.
Yeah.
I have no problem, no shame sharing that at all, one bit. That was an awesome deer and an incredible hunt. And
that's just a number.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Don't care how old he is.
No. And, dang, I'm right. And if ODB was 12.5, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like
the
there's two different categories. There's the size of the antlers that gets the heart rate up, and then there's the size of the body or the age that he possibly might be.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things is really what triggers for me, I think.
We talked about the other day, too. It's like, remember the first buck you grunted in? I remember I was muzzleloader hunting, and I was just off a field edge. It was election day. And I remember grunting him in. He just, boom, responded and just worked right in front of me. 30 yards, muzzleloader, dropped him. Little old 6-pointer, 1.5 years old. But for me, it was, holy crap, this deer, I'm talking to this thing. It's responding. It was almost like I wanted to experience basically running the deer in. And when I did, boom, killed it. Awesome. Loved it. It's like the thrill of the hunt is part of it too. Like, you know, that's another almost requirement, I think, of a hunt. Like, I love action packed stuff. That buck there in Kansas, we saw him do some incredible stuff. We saw deer do pre-rut everything you can imagine. So that hunt itself was awesome.
Yeah.
It's not like he just meandered out to a field and fed and head down feeding.
By himself, and you said, all right, give me that gun. Pow.
It was everything put together.
Yeah. Even if you would have jacked it up like you almost did, I thought,
and draw
when it got really still and he saw you and wheeled out of it, would have still been an incredible encounter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, we would have maybe had some frustrations.
Oh, there
would
have been frustrations because of this opportunity.
But it was still the fact that the whole show was done long before the arrow was ever launched.
Yeah.
And to me, I hope that people are listening to this and it maybe is tweaking a little bit of the mindset if they were focused on the age and that's it. And what I hate is the trolls and the social media fights and arguments that break out when some guy shoots a young buck and he's proud of it. And somebody says, why'd you shoot that young buck? Like that just, my heart breaks because it's like, as hunters, we're not picking each other up and not supporting each other when we make comments like
well,
that.
Well, we can't. I mean, we've got to be honest with everyone. There's a sense of pride when it comes to taking an animal and being having a successful hunt, and a lot of people take pride differently and judge pride differently, and to be a top dog, everyone thinks you have to wait. There's a lot of people waiting until a deer's 5.5 to be able to shoot it, and 6.5. Oh, a 4.5 isn't good enough now? Because someone else has shot a 6.5 and he got bigger from 4 to 6, dude. Enjoy the hunt.
Yeah.
Like I'm not saying if all you want to do is shoot mature bucks that you're wrong. No. If that's your goal, let that be your goal. But don't subject others to saying your goal is 100% right. And, well, they might have a different opinion, and that's fine.
And now that kind of goes into. We've got these three categories of types of gun hunters.
Yeah.
And I think the first one...
Well, this is something we always address with our client, though, too. When it comes to doing a consultation, hey, we want to know openly, what's your season like? Talk to us about your season. How do you hunt? What do you hunt? Do you want a gun hunt? Is it important to you? How do your neighbors gun hunt? Because all the information, that feedback that we get, will help determine how we set up a property. But what we
how often you're going to hunt, how many people are hunting with you?
Yeah, is there a week that's really pressured?
Are the people that are hunting with you kids that you just want them to see a bunch of deer, or are you guys serious hardcore and you want to kill Boone and Crockett deer?
And that right there, that question is exactly what we're talking about when it comes to harvest objectives with other people, like. We can go to a property and guy just says, dude, I want to see a pile of deer. We can make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if that's all you want to do. You can shoot a year and a half old buck. That don't matter.
Yeah.
But we have other people who say, no, I want to shoot a 4.5. I want a chance at shooting a mature deer every single year.
Or I want a chance to shoot a 200-inch deer every single year.
We've had that.
Yeah.
There's a good conversation that occurs after that.
Yeah.
What?
Okay. Well, let's shoot for the stars then, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think to us, the whole goal, regardless if they wanted the 200 every year, how can we manage to get you and your friends or family back every single year buying tags, buying gear, and getting outdoors?
Yes.
That's how we manage.
That's the important thing. And so we asked that question, and what I guess we've kind of found is there's a spectrum into which people respond to, well, what are your thoughts on firearm seasons? And firearm seasons, you know, they can vary from state to state and when they occur, and the freedom in which the liberalness of them, even within certain states, they can change. When I was growing up in Virginia, we had portions of the state where just 2-week gun season. The other portion was 5 and 6 week gun seasons. So that question is pretty loaded. But in addition to that, we have to understand that, you know, not every gun season falls during the rut. Some may fall later. You know, in Missouri, again, we're an open firearm season right now, and it came in the 11th, goes for through at least the rest of this week and carries on. But it hits right in the middle of the rut. So a person in Missouri may have a different opinion of firearm season than they do, let's say, in Kansas when it comes in December and runs for a certain period of time. So we have to, when we ask that question, I guess be open-minded to what the responses may be, but, and I guess, and also the way we would manage. However, these three categories, most hunters would be able to identify with one of them or fall into the category in their initial response to how do you hunt during firearms? You know, what do you believe? How do you feel about
first
firearm
one,
season in your state?
The first one, that's the one I say I used to be involved in.
It's like a gang or something, dude.
Yeah, I was in this gang, and we were very anti-gun season.
We didn't wear that blaze orange like everyone else.
We wore it when we were next to the road, and then when the game warden couldn't see us, we took it off.
Yeah.
And then we carried our bows with pride.
Right, right.
And then we started petitions on Facebook.
But it's there's a lot of people that do fall into the category of they're anti-firearm season. Again, in different states and how gun season is set up.
What did you title this one? The anti-firearm
season.
Yeah, the guy who says, I hate it. I hate firearm season. I hate what it means. I hate it.
Yeah, and again, we're not saying that this is right, wrong, or whatever. However, we're just going to give some additional perspective on what this category is, where the stance is, what it means to everyone. And then, in addition, if you don't choose to partake in firearm season, you don't like it, well, here's some suggestions to what you can do to best outfit your property to withstand the pressures of gun season.
And when you say not partake in it, I have to ask, because there's not partaking in it as in I'm staying home and mm-hmm. not partaking in any of the festivities.
Like crossing the arms.
No, and then there's the other one who sits in his stand, even though he hates it. He sits in his stand, and let's say in Missouri, in blaze orange hat and vest, arms crossed, lower lip stuck out, and whines the whole time, but he mm-hmm. still is out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're both, I hate gun season, but they have two ways about yeah. it. And I'll bet you there's more guys that are sitting in their stand with their arms crossed saying, yeah. I hate this, yeah. but they're still out there.
They are. And again, this is not a you're wrong, you're right situation. This is just where I think if everyone was honest with themselves, they'd fall into one of the categories. Well, I guess recently we've seen on Facebook a petition going around to move the gun season.
And that's
so it doesn't fall within the rut.
Even before you moved to Missouri, Matt, you were still in Virginia or Maryland.
Yeah.
And this has been the last 8 years, I think I can vividly remember this conversation getting brought up multiple times every single year where these very serious hunters, myself included, would say, you know, if we're really trying to make Missouri what Kansas and Iowa are, we need to get gun season out of the rut. The rut is when the deer are running everywhere. They're the dumbest they're going to be of all year during all season. And we send the whole Orange Army out there and they get to blast them away. And so there's been this whole argument. Get this out of gun season, or get this out of the rut. Get this out of the rut. Push it back like Iowa and Kansas.
And a bunch of other states. However, what if we were to do that? If that was to happen in the future, what would it change? And not just what would it change as into a deer herd, a population stance, but what would it change for the outlook of the entire state? When we talk about the economy, we talk about the presence of hunters outside of the state coming to the state. What then do we see? Because I think if we were honest with ourselves and really, let's say you are anti-gun hunter, anti-firearm hunter,
yeah.
and you're just strictly bow hunter, your deer season as you know it wouldn't be the same without all these other people buying tags and partaking in deer hunting.
There's definitely strength in numbers. Even yeah. though you don't agree with half of the people, I honestly would bet there's more people. We didn't have the numbers on this, but there's probably more gun hunters. I know there's more gun hunters than bow hunters in the country.
No doubt.
But in Missouri, more specifically, I bet you there's more guys that are gun hunters than bow hunters. But then there's also this other category, or these other categories, where there's probably more people that are nonchalant about it than there are the serious bow hunters. And the serious bow hunters are definitely sometimes, and myself included, especially during these years where I was very anti-gun season, very outspoken, very much in favor of getting it moved. But what scares me, you talked about it, what scares me about that is the fact that, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, we've lost 2 million hunters. We start making huge changes like this to where, let's say we do move the gun season. What's that going to do to the guys that are going out just during that gun season, and
or new hunters that we want to get out there and experience a whitetail rut that is just awesome, and deer just doing what deer do, chasing, mm-hmm. having a lot of encounters and a lot of opportunity to have those harvests. How does that affect that down the road? Let's just say if it was to move to the last weekend of November or into December,
yeah,
what would that do?
I think We have this late youth season, but there's not nearly as many youth hunters to go out because, frankly, it's so cold.
It's late December.
Yeah.
Yeah, it, I think it, right it, at the beginning of...
It's right around Christmas,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, between and that and January, yeah.
It's so cold, so a lot of people don't go out. That could be happening during our main rifle season. We drop mm-hmm. numbers. Or it could overlap with Kansas and Iowa or whatever to where we don't have as many non-residents coming into the state. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's always been the argument. They want too much money. It brings in too much money. Well, it also brings in a lot of people and a lot of hunters. And
a lot of money into a state.
And at the end of the day, we want people hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think and to keep it, like they say on Fox News, fair and balanced, to what would happen to on a positive note? You know, if we were to move it, what would change?
We would get a lot more. We would have a better age, a more older age structure, most likely. Less 2 and 3 year olds wouldn't be shot because they're not running around chasing does like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that overall our trophy structure, our record book entries would probably grow because of that age structure. But I think overall, and you asked in a positive note, I think that's some of the biggest positives that we would see. The population would grow because there wouldn't be as many deer being harvested. Frankly, because they're not moving as much that time.
I think I definitely agree on that. That's something that would most likely be able to be seen if deer season were to be moved. And again, it's not a stance on it. It's just a okay. Food for thought perspective on, okay, this is where a lot of people may fall into the category. And if this were to happen here in the state, this is what could potentially
it's
happen.
It's dangerous. Yeah. It would be very dangerous to try and move that, in my opinion. And so that pretty well covers the first one. What's the second
so that's
one?
Anti.
Yeah, very anti.
a second one that a lot of people possibly fall into is I partake in firearm season because it's my family tradition.
Yep.
It's a tradition that everyone does in and around me, not only my family, but the community. And I partake in it because that's what I do. That's who I am.
It's like the schools that let out.
I think of,
God bless those schools.
Yeah.
We let out opening day deer season.
I had... Oh, gosh, it was an old girlfriend of mine. Her family was originally from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania has so many hunters in their state, and it is a very proud state to be a deer hunter in. When I talk about community and a tradition, that is the first, state that comes to mind for me in my experiences with hunters is Pennsylvania. They have... a firearm season that comes in the Monday following Thanksgiving. And it comes in, there's no school that day. There's never been school that day. Everyone lets out. And it comes in that day. And it's like the world stops in Pennsylvania that day. Because of everyone goes out. Everyone goes out.
I'm not a hunter, but we're out of school. Why are you out of school? Well, it's deer season. Well, so what are you doing? I'm going deer hunting. That's what everybody does. So it's we can all come to school does. On Tuesday and talk about what we saw.
Yeah. It's incredible the support and the tradition and the heritage that in that community, in the state, in those families that they have, like everyone comes together. Deer camp is such an important aspect of that culture, that hunting culture in that state. And, you know, that's just one state in particular that does that. There's many, many others that experience the same thing. But like we said earlier, there's an incredible amount of hunters that fall into that category. And if those hunters said, you know what, this tradition doesn't mean as much to me anymore, I'm just going to stop buying a tag or I'm going to stop hunting, that changes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking majority of hunters fall into that.
And yeah, this is totally the people that I have friends that if I went up to them in July and August and said, look at this buck, they'd say, like, okay. Like, they could care less.
Yeah.
And
they're fishing at that point.
Even that. Like, they're playing golf or watching Cardinals baseball. And then I go up, if I went up to them in September and said, check out this buck just showed up on camera, they'd still look at me and go, okay, yeah, that looks cool. And it's not until the week prior or the day prior when they actually start thinking about it.
Yeah. It's all the people in line at Walmart the night before season opens buying the bullets and buying their tags.
Tink 69, yeah. Camo burlap, and a tag.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love those guys.
Yeah.
Because just because they may not be thinking about deer season, you know, in June or July, doesn't mean that they don't love getting out and experiencing a deer hunt.
And some of those guys are the ones that have breakfast at 6:30. It's the sun's coming up and they're still at breakfast talking.
Yeah.
And they're the guys.
Oh gosh, we gotta get to the woods.
They used to make me so mad. And because those are the guys where I'd hear killed a huge buck and they got out there at 8:30 in the morning and this buck chased a doe by and they shot it. And I'm like, I have poured my heart and soul into all these food plots, all this stuff, and they're the ones who kill them. And now I'm like, oh, good for him. Yeah. I know he's coming back next year.
Oh, yeah.
I know he's putting money into
this big pot of hunters.
That makes us look like conservationists, or that helps us.
It doesn't look like it. Because of the Pittman-Robertson Act, we are conservationists.
Yeah. You just did the Missouri Conservationist Magazine back cover. I am conservation.
Nice.
And that's what that money goes to. And so belittling those people who don't even think about it is not the right approach. We should be thanking them for joining the club. Even though they only join the club for 1 or 2 days a year, they still join the club. They still put money in.
They play an incredibly huge role into making hunting the way it is. And the hunting as we know it.
Yeah.
And you know, again, it doesn't matter which category you fall into, again, because at the end of the day, everyone here is still a hunter.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a hunter.
And we're still conservationists.
Yeah. Now, the last one, the third one, is I carry a gun because everyone else does, and it's rifle season now. I've been bow hunting, but now it's rifle season, so I'm going to carry my rifle. And I think this is, again, I think we've said on each one, a lot of people fall into this one. It may be, maybe without even knowing it, they're split. This is a thirds. If you were to poll the hunting population.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows?
But who knows? I doubt
me,
it. But
this one is a guy who's been bow hunting all year round, and he's like, yeah, I'll take my rifle out. Sure. You know, I've got a week and a half to make this thing done.
To me,
let's
I think this is the respect guy, the guy who demands respect. The deer been coming in the food plot at 100 yards, and now he's
pay.
Yeah, he's carrying the gun, not because he wants to, because he gets a huge thrill about carrying the gun, because he's like, I'm tired, I'm gonna punch a tag, and so he's
teach
like
that deer lesson.
Yeah. It's time to get some respect. Yeah. I noticed you looked at me like I was like, where's
he
going
I was like,
with this?
Yeah, what are you talking about? Getting respect because yeah. I can carry a gun, NRA proud, or what are you talking yeah. about?
No, you got to get some respect.
Funny.
Yeah, so
teach
to me, that's and this is a category that I fall into now, to where we bow hunted all fall, ever since season opened up, but it's now gun season, and truth be told, we both like carrying a bow more. I like the challenge of a bow. I like the close encounters. But when it's the 10-day gun season, fine. I'll throw a rifle on and break out the tradition and be like, okay. Like this year, broke out the old Ott-6, hadn't carried it, hadn't even hardly broke it out of the case. And
can we just start referring to it as the shoulder cannon?
The shoulder cannon?
I think that'd be better.
It doesn't feel like a shoulder cannon. It's like, to me, I don't know what
kind. It's a 30-06 Woodmaster. What else is it? It's a shoulder cannon,
yeah,
dude.
I guess.
Everyone else who has that gun, they're like, yeah, darn right it is. Yeah. Shoulder cannon.
Yeah, and to me, it was just like, broke it out, and it's just like, man, I haven't carried this thing. And I think it was 6 years since I'd carried it during gun season. Mm. And it was just like, wow, okay. All right.
Feel that wood grain in the cold morning.
Yeah, got that old
steel.
Got the old, I think of the old Remington BDL. I got that. I got that old, and it's got that Leopold scope on it. You know,
yeah.
I don't know if they say it otherwhere, but here in Ozarks, a lot of guys call him Leopold, and it should be Leupold. That's how the commercials say it, Leupold.
It's got an E in there. You got
Leopold. That's how that Scottish-Irish heritage, you add them extra syllables.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah.
So this is the guy who partakes and enjoys it, and I guess, as you said, demands respect. But, you know, when it comes to this, and I talked about it earlier, about when that gun season falls in your state, there's different strategies in which we would suggest for you to use based on your firearm season and when it comes in. And let's just talk about an early gun season. And we're going to group muzzleloader, inline muzzleloaders, and firearm season in that same category. As an early gun season, now modern day firearms can shoot 200 plus yards. It's a rifle, in my opinion.
Modern day muzzleloaders, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, might as well be a rifle.
And not, you know, that's not a derogatory comment to muzzleloaders. It's just the fact that you could shoot them at 200 yards. So,
and even further.
It's a firearm
so, yeah.
season. So
yeah.
Anyhow, early gun season, if I was a landowner and I was going to partake in it, what's something I would do on my property during early gun season to be successful? And when I say early gun season, in the case of Maryland, there's a muzzleloader season, 3-day muzzleloader season that usually falls like the 17th, 18th, and 19th
of October. Yeah.
Virginia muzzleloader season, the first 2 weeks of November. Like, that's kind of the early gun season that we're talking about, somewhere in those dates.
Mm-hmm.
I know Georgia comes in, firearm season comes in early. North Carolina comes in early. South Carolina comes
you
in.
You got to say South Carolina August. Comes in August.
Yeah.
To me, we always talk about this. Early season, let's just say pre-rut, post-rut, or pre-rut, rut, post-rut, or early season, heart of season,
yeah.
late season. And those early season, late season, food cover patterns. There's very much a deer are consistently going to food plots or crop fields or an acorn tree.
Wow. What is that?
I don't know. It felt weird. They're going to acorn trees. And so to me, it's very much early season. I'm trying to do habitat and I'm trying to plan a hunting strategy around that. I want to somehow find a attractive food source or plant an attractive food source for that time frame.
To me, if it's an early gun season, I don't want to put any pressure on a bedding area. I want to be over that food source. I want a larger view because I can reach out and touch them. So might mm-hmm. as well have a large, maybe a destination food source
yeah.
that they're getting to. And I want
and
to be attractive.
You want it to be close to a bedding area because there's a chance
correct.
It's still warm during October. And so you want to position that bedding area close to the food source. And what might help that is put it on an east slope or a north slope or somewhere to where it's in the shade, not the food source, the bedding area, yes.
Because I'm not hunting over that bedding area, but I'm just cutting down the distance between bedding to food. So then when I have the larger view and deer come to that food source, I can do what needs to get done.
They can stand up from a bed and walk to the food plot in a
daylight
short
hours.
Period. Yes.
Yeah. Get there for you to be able to fill a tag.
So big destination, large view,
yeah.
bedding area on a north slope. And you may have throw in I think of a big square, a big rectangle, and you've got in an ideal situation, you have a bedding area on a north slope that's very close to it and a bedding area that's also on a west slope or a south slope that's close to it just in case you do get a cold spell or you are in a northern state where it is cold in October.
Mm-hmm. Then you're going to prefer that south or western facing slope and come from a different direction.
Yeah. Now this is the guy that you're trying to manage for the rut gun hunt.
This is the rut. Now we're moving on to the rut. When it comes to setting up this property, to me, and when what the deer are doing, the behavior that a deer hunter can most likely see is at this time frame, the does have gotten pushed, they've gotten nudged, and are tired of it. They're seeking thick cover, and that's where they're at. And like tonight, hunting with Seth Harker, we saw 30-plus deer who maybe a 3.5-year-old and a larger buck way after dark. The rest, does and fawn.
Hmm.
But this year's a little bit different. It's kind of weird. We're not experiencing the exact same rut activity we typically do. But
what rut?
But on a typical point, I want to be looking over thick bedding areas, thick cover. I want a big view. I want
or close to them, like very close,
because they're going to be in there and they might get nudged out, and you know, loop back around and get back in that cover to evade or hide from the bucks if they're not receptive. But we saw a lot of little bucks tonight. We didn't see the big mature bucks. We pondered, wonder if they're locked down with the doe. Wonder if they're pushing does and thicker cover.
Yep.
They're not coming out to these food sources.
If there was a doe who's close to being receptive or receptive, if she's in that field, you're going to know it.
We're going to absolutely know it. From the little bucks, the yearlings, and the 2.5-year-old or two that were out there, we're going to know. There's very little chasing going on out in the field.
What we're seeing on the Prairie Hollow property is it's been a very strange year, and that's kind of this whole creation, Atlanta legacy, and the whole Prairie Hollow property and family farm transformation is they're all at the beginning stages. They start at the same time. So we're learning this as this goes, and so we're talking about what we're learning. And right now what we're seeing is patterns, typical patterns have changed. Deer are hanging out what we suspect in those treetops where they just logged. Even though there's equipment, gravel roads close, seems like that's where a lot of the deer are coming from. Deer typically came to the cut cornfield from the west. Now they're coming from the east and after dark. We're not seeing them until we're walking out and we're bumping them up in the bushes or up in the treetops. And that's just classic this time of year for two reasons. Bucks are really pestering the does, nudging them around, chasing them, trying to find receptive does. They're getting annoyed. They're trying to hide out. But now we're also getting the hunting pressure. There's a lot of banging and driving and people walking and scents all through the woods. So they're trying to find the thickest cover so they can hide out and survive. And if I'm trying to manage that property, Matt, I think you had to comment when we talked about the amount of people we saw and the guns we were hearing. You were like, this is nuts. How are people not dying out here?
What I was envisioning in and around, and you know, this is just a small example of Missouri and southern Missouri. Based with the number of gunshots that we're hearing from varied locations, I stop and consider basically your scent cone. Basically how your scent from one, your stand is dispersing throughout the woods. And obviously as you get farther away from your position, it fans out, wind currents take it different ways, so on and so forth. How many deer smelt a human opening day of gun season? Just in our, let's say, 5-mile radius. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, run, run. Stop a little bit. Stop, keep on running.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And
that's the only life I know for gun season, especially, I mean, you sit there. A couple years ago, my brother counted with a pitch counter 120
shots
by 8 o'clock in the morning, so an hour and a half of daylight, hour and 45 minutes of daylight.
Insane.
Yeah, it's nuts. That's good old Booger County gun season right there. And so for me, if I'm managing a property, which we are, we want cover.
Cover.
And I want
to be able to hunt as well, though. I still want, when it comes to firearm season, I still want to take the rifle out and be successful. So I want cover. But I want to have a trail or a road that splits that cover. So when they cross back and forth as they're checking or seeking receptive does, I could take a shot.
Or you don't have that big of an area you can't make a 100-acre section of cover.
Yeah.
So you have 5 acres here, 5 acres here, 5 acres here. I want to be able to effectively hunt in between those to catch deer going back and forth or moving throughout from one chunk to the next.
One thing that is often underrated is the presence of a gas line or a power line throughout a property. Like, I would utilize that during a rifle season when, again, I can reach out and touch them. And I would place a bedding area on both sides of that right-of-way that I know is going to be maintained and open, and then I'd shoot the deer as they cross back and forth because they're in that cover, and I'd set it up where I can use that to my advantage.
Yep.
And it's that simple, just identifying, okay, deer are going to be seeking cover because of all the scent cones out there and whatnot. Like, Basically for two reasons, for security from bucks and for security from us as hunters.
Yep.
That's where the magic is for a firearm season during the rut.
Post-rut, to me, back to food source.
Food.
If you want to kill a giant, get a late season muzzleloader tag. I think it's the second muzzleloader season of Iowa. Go up there, find a food source. You're going to have a great chance.
Food source and what really is up there that would be extremely good, standing grain.
Yes.
Let a farmer just leave some standing grain. They have great yields, better than food plots.
Mm-hmm.
Let it stand. And make sure you leave enough for late season, for it to get through to late season, and you will have deer.
And honestly, if I would rather have 5 acres. I would rather pay a farmer to leave 5 acres of standing grain than go in and plant a quarter acre here, half acre here, quarter acre here.
I would like a large area.
Because they could consume it quickly.
Very quickly.
So that's crop country. Leave some grain somewhere. Find some grain. Somehow get it there. In our area, we don't have a lot of crop fields. It's wheat fields, trying to plant something that's an attractive food source that can contain a lot of deer and have that available during the late season.
Or even a clear cut as well. Mm-hmm. They can bed and feed there.
Now, we're going to notice that and a lot this winter as we start cutting. Trees continue to be harvested. And there's a lot of treetops laying around. There's a lot of buds on those tops. A lot of young, tender limbs at the end that they're going to eat. That's going to be very attractive.
And it's still an adequate food source. Like, deer typically eat that. Deer don't typically eat a cash crop. Like, that's not natural.
No.
For that to happen. Not saying it's not good or it's not, or you
it
know,
doesn't
it's not
happen. It's very effective.
Very.
But long
effective.
Before those were there, those crops were ever there, deer were surviving on
twigs.
What was in the timber. Twigs.
Buds.
Huge fire ripped through and there's treetops everywhere and there's early succession growing. That's what they were surviving on. That acres.
Early forest regeneration.
And so if you can have that, let's say you're just timber country, you can do that. To provide a food source.
And it's a great food source.
And well, I'm excited to do that this winter with our hang and hunt, move in right behind the logger, hang tree stand where they just fell trees that day and see what happens.
Right.
That's another way. And the same thing, you want to have a as early season, but let's just swap it and say, okay, late season, it's probably cold. I've got standing grain. Now I want to put a bedding area on a west-facing, south-facing slope and get deer to that food source during daylight. That's it.
That's it. That's simple. And when they come in, they're going to pour in. If that's the only food source available, they're going to pour in.
Have we been talking for an hour and what, a half? I don't know.
I don't
Surely
think it's
not.
That long.
Okay.
It's been a while, but
it's been a while. We had a lot more deer camp talks than we thought we would or than you thought we would.
I did. But you know what? That's just fine. And I hope that it just simply sharing all that and sharing, you know, what tradition, you know, your family has been through and what I remember as a young hunter and just the feeling of the anticipation of gun season and what it does for new hunters. And sharing all that and beyond that with the stereotypes. I hope it just brings perspective to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, and again, there's no finger pointing. There's none of that. It's simply, this is the current state in which we're at as hunters. This is the very current for us firearm season because it just came open. So let's talk about it, but let's talk honestly about it and how we feel, how our career, I guess, has shaped us into what we're, where we now stand on things. But it's important to not only hear this, I think, have an open mind, but just develop your own thoughts on it. Not saying that you agree, but
think
we're
a
hunters.
Little bit more about it.
We're hunters. Everyone's yep. a hunter. No matter if you take a gun to the woods or if you don't, or if you show up to deer camp to just eat, it don't matter.
Whether you shoot fixed blades or mechanicals, whether you drive a Ford to camp or a Chevy to camp.
Or a Dodge.
Whether you carry a crossbow or a compound and your cousin carries a recurve and he talks crap to you the whole time.
Yeah.
We're all hunters at the end of the day.
Or we shoot iron sights or a scope, your dad's Winchester Model 94.
Whether you shoot a Nikon or a Tasco.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
No. Just hopefully that you think a little bit more about, you know, as I've heard a million times, walk a mile. What is it about that person and hunting that gets them out there? And respect that as long as they're getting out there and trying to get other people out there. And we've said it a million times ever since those numbers came out. I think we both have been a little bit like, whoa, this, in my lifetime, if we keep that trend, something's going to happen that will not be
If we good. Didn't say anything about it, then we weren't doing what we feel like our job is or our duty as other hunters. You know, I just think of like the olive branch. It just needs to be extended to all groups, all hunters out there. And you know,
I'm going to read you something, Matt. This goes into, I was at the Wonders Wildlife Museum.
You can read?
Yeah, sure can. And this was the Wonders Wildlife Museum at Bass Pro, Springfield, Missouri. Got to go see it. Wonderful museum. And this was towards the very end. I think it's right as you walk out. And it's a quote from, my phone took a blurry picture. I'll butcher it either way. He's a conservationist. He's got a different name and it's blurry. So, but I can read this enough. In the end, we will conserve only what we love. We will love only what we understand. We will understand only what we are taught.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, like I saw that and it gave me chills. It was like, man, that is it right there. And I think for us, we love habitat. We love land. And the reason for this podcast creating was to help educate others on land and hopefully motivate you to have a passion and pride towards that land. And hopefully we are here teaching you what we've learned to where you can pass that down and teach other people.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd like to get some feedback on what people think about this podcast.
Oh, that's scary.
No, I'm serious. I'm serious because if we're going to be honest about sharing what we believe or sharing, you know, I think if you guys need to respond and let us know what your thoughts are.
For sure. Even as far as the gun season, whether it should be moved or not, and bow season, and the whole, just the whole confrontational type arguments that are derived from these stereotypes.
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's not a point to, you know, to bring up these platforms of where people stand, but just to keep an open mind and listen to other people. Everyone's experiences are 100% different. You know, we always talk about in habitat, what's the thing we always go back to? It starts with a D, the big D. Diversity.
Oh, diversity.
Diversity.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say Dallas?
Yeah. I'm going through the thing.
Yeah. Diversity. And as with plants, as with habitat, diversity, diversity, diversity. As with society, diversity, diversity, diversity. Now with hunters, diversity, crossbows, guns.
Yeah. Different stances.
Deer driver.
Right.
Stand hunter, blind hunter, road hunter. No, not a road.
Get out of here. Yeah.
Poacher, get on out of here. Diversity. It takes all kinds. It
takes all kinds of kinds.
Yeah.
Let's stay together as hunters.
Though. Now, you mentioned it earlier, so I'll just in case you are hanging on, you're probably not, but Matt mentioned the video, Evergreen Nature Preserve, releasing that video this week. Hopefully you enjoy it. It's a great example of what conservation is. Laddie left a legacy or is leaving a legacy of conservation here. And I really do. The video has he's selling the property. So
he's passing on his legacy.
Yes.
He's passing on a legacy that he has built around a family's property that in the year 2000 was cultivated open ground for crops. And I'm not going to spoil what it looks like now. You're going to have to watch that video.
Yep.
But it is thriving.
That video, hopefully, you don't look at the for sale at the beginning and see kind of negativity with that. It's hopefully you look at this and are motivated by what he did with that land and what he transformed it into.
Yes, the property's for sale. Cool, great. But the purpose, we would be doing an injustice if we don't share the video to show this mindset of conservation and the transformation that this property has gone through. We talk about properties wearing many different faces through many different years. This is a prime example of bare ground, dirt, exposed dirt, now to thriving with wildlife.
For sure.
It's incredible. 17 years.
Huh. All right. That wraps up this
week.
Wrap
it up.
Deer camp.
Deer camp.
Habitat for deer hunting with a rifle and all things confrontational. All right. So we'll catch you guys next week.
See ya. Thanks for listening to another episode of Land and Legacy's Hunting and Habitat Management Podcast. If you like what you hear, check us out at landandlegacy.tv. You can submit a viewer question right there, and we're answering the podcast, or find us on Facebook and Instagram.
Feels pretty good knowing that from the beginning of time, God has called us to be a caretaker, gamekeeper, a manager of the land. So with that being said, don't you think we should do it all for the love of the land and the glory to God? Yeah.